one thing for me. Hello and welcome to The Influence Show, Episode 3, with my co-host, Kristen Gwynn.
Hello.
And our guest, Dom, a.k.a. Night Doll.
Hello.
Welcome, Night Doll. Thank you. So, what do we have on the roster for today?
First, we're going to hear about your rat, right?
I guess we're going to hear about a rat. Is that right? Anyways, this is me reading at the moth, because we have to kill time.
It's your penultimate storyteller for the evening. Please welcome to stage Patrick Hilsman. Patrick Hilsman!
Hi, everybody. Okay, so I'm just going to preface this by saying that I used to be a heroin addict, but that I'm no longer a heroin addict. Thank you! Yes! Cheers! Cheers! But for the record, I do not believe in a higher power, and I still drink, so none of that 12-step bullshit. Anyways.
Yes, drink is the high power.
So anyways, back when I was a heroin addict, I spent a lot of time on the subway going to different neighborhoods to buy heroin. So once I was waiting for the subway in Harlem where I lived, and I was just standing on the platform minding my own business, and a bunch of tourists, you know, file through the turnstile, and I can tell that they're tourists. I can't tell you exactly what specified that they were tourists, but trust me, I can tell. And just as they're milling about on the platform waiting for the train, a bunch of rats just, you know, run out from underneath one of the service platforms and just start to, and the tourist ladies just start screaming and howling. And then the rats look at them and the rats freak out and freeze. You know? And so the tourists are confused and the rats are confused. And like, but I had my shit together in that moment. So at some point, because of the shrieking, one of the rats freaks out and like the papa rat just freezes right in front of my legs. And I'm just thinking to myself, perfect. So I just punt it directly into those bars that separate. I don't know, you guys aren't from New York, but whatever. We have like bars that separate the platform from the rest of the train station, and it just smacks directly into the bars, and then it hits the floor, and it just starts shaking like a fish. You know what I mean? And for the record, I'm a vegetarian, but I don't mind killing vermin. You know, but at the same time, I don't want this rat to like suffer painfully and just die a horrible death. So I'm thinking, I gotta put it out of its misery. So the tourists are still watching me, and at this point they're looking at me like I'm some kind of hero because I've taken care of the rat problem. But then I'm like, you know, this rat is suffering and I don't want it to die a painful death, so I'm thinking to myself of options to put it out of its misery. And I realized that I had an unopened can of Arizona iced tea in my bag. Do you guys know what that is? It's like a tall boy, kind of. So I get down on one knee with the Arizona iced tea and I just start pounding the rat. Just blow after merciless blow and just bones crunching. And you would think that a rat cannot scream. They can scream. Trust me. So anyways, you know, the tourists who thought that I was like a hero for kicking the rat away obviously won't go all the way and commit to it and like endorse the fact that I'm willing to put it out of its misery. So anyways, I'm just beating it, and finally it just stops twitching, and I'm like, all right. Thank God that's over, you know? And then just at that moment, the train pulls in, and I sit down, and, you know, obviously I'm not gonna waste my Arizona iced tea. I crack it open, and I take a sip of it, and, you know, all the tourists are sort of sitting across from me, and I look at them, and I'm like, what? You know? So I guess the point of the story is that, you know, they'd come to New York, and they had a different idea about it, and they wanted to, you know, find whatever they were looking for in New York. And through the confusion, I'd like to feel that I taught them a lesson, which is that in reality, it's us who are the animals. Thank you.
So were you awarded any medals for that?
I came in third. I came in third.
You are an American hero.
Yeah, and the guy that came in first deserved it, and the person that came in second did not. So yeah. I was fucked over by the moth.
I didn't mean an award for the literature. I meant an award for
rat killing.
For the killing.
No, but I mean, I feel
for your service.
I feel better about the mercy, like the fact that I couldn't just watch an animal needlessly suffer. and that I was willing to, I was like willing to actually do something about that instead of just talking about it.
My roommate, we had a rat infestation, or not a rat, a mouse, mm-hmm. slightly different, a bit of a mouse infestation, and I guess he was the only person around. I was out of town, and so was our vegetarian roommate, and the mice were so bad that he set a bunch of traps, and like in one day, or even just a few hours, he just heard them snap, snap all day. He collected a bunch, like more than five, and he had to, and the traps, no, he had the glue traps, and he could hear them like scraping around.
The glue traps are terrible. Like, I can't do that. Like, if I'm gonna, like, the point of that story is like mercy. You know, like if you're gonna kill vermin, you gotta just do it.
Joe then took them all out to the backyard and put them in plastic bags and smashed their heads with rocks. So that was
is that how he did it?
Yeah.
That's what he said he did.
I have a terrible, terrible, terrible story about that.
How did you do it?
We have so much time to kill, so we might as well.
How do you like to kill mice?
I don't like to kill anything.
What's your method?
All right, but you do have to kill certain things, like mice. Well,
it's the way of life.
It's the way of life. You especially have to kill Nazis. That's above all
Nazi
else.
Nazi mice.
Yeah, if there's one lesson to learn, it's always kill Nazis. But anyways, so moving on. Moving on to killing mice. So yeah, God, this is terrible. In college, a bunch of my friends caught a mouse in a glue trap, and there were like some assholes that were talking about like, hey, let's, you know, like, let's freeze it, like, let's drown it, or like, you know, like just really like sadistic shit. And I was like, this is terrible. So I knew that there was a friend that had like a airsoft kind of gun. So I just was like,
held it.
Yeah, and I felt like a man after doing that.
I don't think I've ever killed a mouse. I haven't really killed, I guess, you know.
At all?
I did when I was little.
Meat? Do you eat meat?
Yes.
Then you're a mass killer.
I used to rip the legs off Daddy Long Legs, but that doesn't really count because
terrified of Daddy Long Legs.
Barely alive.
That's true. It's sort of. I would say that it's lower than us somewhat.
Like, yeah. And I chopped worms up. They don't die. That's why I did it with like a popsicle stick on the sidewalk. Wiggling. Yeah. That was weird.
That's pretty weird, yeah.
Yeah, that was really weird, but it was really fun.
I could never be cruel to like intelligent animals though when I was growing up. It just didn't like I knew people that like went out to like shoot rabbits and stuff like that, and it just doesn't seem. What I love is the BB gun. I think that the BB gun is like one of the greatest inventions of all time because it doesn't kill.
Yeah.
You know, but it sends the same message as if you were going to kill someone.
You get the thrill of killing without like the unwanted like. After.
Not even just it's like I'm watching you, you know? Like I've hit you with if I can hit you with a BB. Anyways, moving along.
there's a reason
that we're talking about vermin today, which is that I found the decapitated head and left arm of a rat today in my backyard. And at first, like I had to do like a double take, and I'm thinking like, that's weird. I thought that like maybe one of the cats was injured. Like at first, I thought that maybe it was like one of the cats lost an arm, and it was like a cat arm. And I look up, it's like the head and left arm of a rat. And so on top of the two cats that I have living in my apartment, we have four, occasionally five cats that we take care of, And apparently they wanted to leave a present for me. So,
they know how you love dead mice.
I don't love it. I gotta say, like, it has to be done sometimes. But I think that, like, we should try and live in peace with, like, the rats. You know, I feel bad about initiating the first blow on that rat. It was just instinct, you know?
Yes. I mean, speaking of vermin, a lot of discussion about this rodent Brock Turner.
Yes.
Lately today, the Stanford rapist who happens to be good at swimming. The most recent thing that I heard is that ABC News has uncovered some court records that they say show he lied about his substance abuse history.
Interesting.
And these photos, which I'm not sure are actually on the website, but apparently show him holding a bomb at a party, which is, you know, just clear evidence that he is a rapist. No.
I think there's definitely a connection there.
But, I mean, it's just...
Another bong taking down a swimmer.
Yeah. It's silly. It's silly.
Damn.
Oh, yeah. Swimmers and their bongs.
Fucking bongs, man.
Swimmers and their bongs and their rape.
But asshole piece of shit.
I think it's funny to, like, attack his, like, oh, you weren't a drinker. Or, you know, he said, I wasn't a drinker. And, like, trying to blame it on, like, campus drinking culture. Kind of funny to be like, oh no, we have proof that you did drink and you did party, because that's so clearly not what this case is about. It wasn't about drinking culture, it was about rape, and that's what his victim said in that really powerful essay.
Rapist cause rape. Alcohol does not cause rape whatsoever.
The amount of alcohol you've had can determine whether or not you've been raped, not whether or not you're a rapist.
Yes. Well, and yeah, I mean, he actually said that, you know, because he feels like he is such a victim in this situation, that he wants to start a program where he goes around to colleges and educates them about how one night of drinking can really fuck you over and, you know, turn you into a rapist.
And turn you into a rapist. Who would have thought?
And his victim wrote to him, that's what we're talking about. You think that's what I've spent the past year fighting for? Not awareness about campus sexual assault or rape or learning to recognize consent? Campus drinking culture. Down with Jack Daniels. Down with Sky Vodka. If you want to talk about drinking, go to an AA meeting. You realize having a drinking problem is different than forcefully trying to have sex with someone. Show men how to respect women, not to drink less. And I like that.
Like, if he'd taken babies and, like, broiled them and then, like, meticulously cut them up and eaten them when he was drinking, like, it would, you know, you'd still have to be like, there's a reason that, like, he's a sociopath.
Right.
And exactly.
That's why he did this.
She's also, in her amazing letter, which everyone should read, she says, you know, where does promiscuity even come into play? I don't see how, because he says, you know, this is about being slutty when you're drunk. She says, I don't see headlines that say Brock Turner guilty of drinking too much and the sexual promiscuity that goes along with that. But she tells him, rest assured, if you fail to fix the topic of your talk, I will follow you to every school you go and give a follow-up presentation. I would like to see that. So maybe we can just get her a program. They should make her letter mandatory reading.
Absolutely.
If she wants to talk about it, we could try and interview her.
What?
I don't know.
Oh yeah, a program for us. Is that what you thought I meant?
No. But I'm saying that, like, she probably
fund it. If you're listening,
you're welcome to come on our show,
Brock. You too.
Well, he's welcome to remotely.
No, he's welcome
be
to come on and
us.
Be and yes.
And be tortured and crucified.
So people know where he is in a dark basement.
I would love to give him a piece of my mind.
We're in a basement. That's what's sad is he's like.
So people know that
we're in a dark basement. It's not dark, but we're in a basement. We're in an actual basement right now, underneath a.
It's not next to a dumpster though, so Brock might not like it.
He wouldn't.
It might not
be
ideal for him. He prefers to be, you know, next to a dumpster with a passed out girl, humping her.
The dumpster's not the issue. You know, like plenty of good consensual things can happen. In or around dumpsters. And history has proved that. But yes.
Neither dumpsters nor alcohol.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're gonna eat children or rape people, like there's a causality between like your behavior and like your actions that alcohol is not necessarily the filter for.
Well, this is what makes him pretty terrifying, because he's getting out September 2nd, and he still has taken no responsibility whatsoever for him as a person, like what he has done. His parents haven't. That childhood friend of his that came to his, like, aid and wrote a stupid letter defending him, and she was in that horrible band called Good English, and they were supposed to play in Brooklyn this weekend, and Brooklyn said, fuck no, bitch, we don't do that here, take your rape shit back to Ohio, sorry, Ohio, but whatever. But honestly, he has taken no responsibility. He is a predator. Like, he is a predator, and he's going to be out.
He's just
in
a
3 months.
A poor swimmer boy who got too drunk.
I saw a really good tweet today that a girl said, I want to get really good at swimming so that I can get away with killing a bunch of rapists. And I was like, that's right.
That would be great.
Right?
Oh, man.
Yeah, if only we could treat Brock Turner like we do rats and mice.
No, I don't know.
Just take a rock straight to his head.
Rock straight to the head.
I gotta stand up for the justice system as it's supposed to be, but not as it is. Like, I don't know. I think that, like, send him to jail for life or whatever. Like, I don't know.
I mean, I don't even think that we can incarcerate our way out of rape culture.
Well, it only perpetuates
the problem, unfortunately.
And we also need the courts to take it, like, more seriously. Like, it's just as much, like, the judge's fault. It's like, there's, like, a whole movement going on about unseating the judge. And I'm part of an event next week at Holy Rad Studio in Brooklyn. And it's by a secret, like, female, like, feminist society called Girl Cult. And we're doing a letter writing campaign to unseat the judge since he's running unopposed. So if we have to all get together, there's, I think, 2 petitions going around. One has at least 100,000 signatures that I've seen so far.
It's amazing. Nice.
Yeah. But if anyone's around, next Wednesday, Holy Rad Studio, 7 to 10 p.m., Nidal will be spinning. We're going to be writing letters, dancing, getting lit. Free booze, 21 and over. You know how we do. Yeah, exactly. Taking down the patriarchy and the fucking justice system that doesn't know how to protect us. You know, a normal Wednesday night in Brooklyn.
Just a Wednesday.
Just
that's
another,
not a normal Wednesday night.
Rat to kill.
Exactly.
There's many, Vermin. Many a rat to kill. And that I will testify to. Okay, moving along.
Dom does a lot of interesting things with her nightlife.
Yeah.
Some cool activism around things like tampons as well.
Tell us about that.
With her DJ.
Yeah, actually. I just played for Codex tampon brand a couple weeks ago. It all came from a Tumblr post.
And Codex sounds like it's a dubstep. The name of a dubstep group.
It might as well be.
Anyway, sorry, go on.
That is a new idea. Thank you for that. Let me know if you want to be in the band. Yeah, so Codex and Disc Women, which is an all-women DJ collective in New York, amazing. They contacted Disc Women to have DJs come, including me, this period pop-up shop, which was on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan, all swanky. But it was all from a Tumblr post. This girl just posted about the stigma of periods and how she wishes she could just have a place where she can just be open and free to talk about her period and to, like, get nice things to do with just PMS and just that time of the month, mm-hmm. everything to do with it, and just be comfortable with it.
Yeah.
So Codex heard of this, and they threw up, a pop-up shop on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan, and they interviewed us. I was getting interviewed on the street, bright lights, talking about my period, you know, just another day.
It's a normal day.
Exactly. Just living it up on the crimson wave.
And this whole time, Shrillex did nothing.
Exactly. Exactly. But it was
fucking
actually
chills.
A really amazing event, and they had a giant tampon plush pillow that we all were taking photos with. It was the best thing I ever heard of in my life, and I posted on Instagram, like, who made this? And this girl commented, like, I made it. I'm like, oh, my God. This was the best end of the day ever. I need that audio. The video should be coming out soon. You can see me talking about my period.
I want my bedding to be period related. That would be great. Just to have, like,
right?
Your bed have, like, one giant dot.
No, I want it to be like a massive stain. Like my comforter just looked like a bloodied pad.
Right, like a murder scene.
So not subtle, just visual.
Oh yeah, yeah. And then I can have each pillow can be a tampon.
Yeah.
Maybe I could even somehow get my phone charger to look like the string.
I'll get this girl to make it for you.
Yeah.
We know who she is.
A whole bedroom.
Are you guys going to start an Etsy?
Menstrual-themed bedroom.
We should.
Yes, and a Pinterest board.
Menstrual-themed Etsy. It's going
to... People should start having menstrual-themed weddings, too. Make some Pinterest boards about that.
I think people should just stop having weddings.
Me, too.
I had to be in one.
We'll call it period pieces.
Dom, you're a musical guest tonight.
I am.
Can you play stuff off of your laptop?
Of course I can.
Amazing. So we're gonna...
just... Night Doll.
Night Doll.
Everybody.
That is Night Doll. All right, you are plugged in. Let me just... okay, yeah, just...
all right.
Play away.
Hear the
play
song away. About weed.
Yeah.
Looking lean, homie. They say the robbers looking. bubble in my living room in deep thoughts. But I never mind, yeah, I've been guilty of that. Rewind, we blacked a bit of chat, and throw the air in, don't close your time. Mess over the bucket, spluttering, you take a light. We just spark up in a cove and get me high as a guy. Yeah, the weed ducks, slipping down weed ducks. Come tap up, beautiful feathers, yeah, yummy peacock. Vanilla, yeah, this the freedom in the mud rugs. Slipping weed ducks, so come on in here for a weed duck. Let them puff, touch your eye, you're gonna bend over. Sucking like a liar, throwing five for dough. Growing C7s, but growing weed for all. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And every night this is sending long. How you doing soon? Mind if I come in, let's pop and pop in your river room. Listening to shots up every night, they over danger doom. Let the boom boom in the spot, I'll make your mind room. It seems you won't come back from like programming a drum and ending up at a pretty year before I claim in number one. No chance I could go back to changes previous they done. And I was written to make the crowd jump, jump, jump. Yeah, them weed ducks, whooping down weed ducks. Come to pop a beautiful feathers on me peacock. Vanilla, yeah, there's the freedom in them hot trucks. So then weed ducks are coming in here for a weed duck. I let them pop, touch your white rope and up and over all. Say it loud, don't shout it on the mic and spray it on the wall. Soaking like a lion, the 1 5 foot tall. Blowing seeds up in the bowl and making weed fall. I'm proud to visit old me. I'm a local connoisseur, a sticky on one green. Ironically, I go to see you while I pop the weed duck. Yeah, ironically, this is how my life always has to be. Yeah, the weed ducks, slipping down weed ducks. Come to puff the beautiful feathers on the peacock. Hell, I just taste the freedom in the mud trucks. Slipping weed ducks, you're coming in here for a weed duck.
Hello, and we are back. And you were just listening to Night Doll.
Hey, hey.
What are the names of those two songs?
So, I just played a bunch of songs about weed and drugs, you know, the usual. The first song I played was Picky About My Weed, which is Wavy and Tommy Too. That's also, Wavy's also the third song that I played, the last one, Every Day Wasted, you know that song. And the second song is by this really awesome MC named Soom T. It's called Weed Hawks. He has a whole EP out just about weed, and it's like Soom T and Disrupt, and she's lit. So you should check her out.
Very cool. Tell us a little bit more about some of the events that you were planning.
So besides the Girl Cult event next week, I mean, what I'm really just doing is playing Pride Weekend. I'm playing two parties. I'm playing Friday night, June 24th at Baby's All Right in Williamsburg. It's a Beyonce, Nicki Minaj, and Rihanna party called Holy Trinity from Philly, my hometown. What up? The guest list is actually pretty insane. It says it's like 1,100 people attending, so it's going to be sweaty and disgusting.
And sounds fun.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be absolutely gross, but fun. You should come.
Okay, well, we're going to hear some more of Night Doll's music, but now we're going to talk to Joseph Zabrowski, who is a freelance journalist who's been working on a very, very interesting case recently out of Minnesota. So, Joseph, why don't you hit it?
Hey, yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. It's good to see you.
So I've been covering the trial, which recently concluded, of a group of Somali-American Minnesotans who were convicted of conspiring to provide material support to ISIS. They were caught up in a long investigation that had been going on, conducted by the FBI for a couple of years at least. And so it just wrapped up. My story is called Man Whose Name Surfaced in Minnesota, Terror Trial, Was Real Recruiter, Says FBI Informant. So this is about...
It's on Medium.
Yeah, that's correct. It's on Medium. So this story is about a man named Tony Osmond who says he was an informant for the FBI on this case, yet he was never called as a witness. And the crux of the story here is that he wants to know why the person he says he was assigned to spy on was not arrested as part of this conspiracy. So he was assigned to spy on a man named Amir Mishal, allegedly. And Mishal is someone whose name came up a lot in testimony over these past few weeks. And he seems to have this affiliation.
And you were in the courtroom.
I was for some of the days.
Yeah, okay.
I was there for part of the some of the parts where Michelle's name came up, and I also relied on the Star Tribune and NPR accounts to fill in a couple of gaps where I wasn't there.
Cool.
So Tony Osmond is an Egyptian American. He's a double cousin of Amir Mishal, and he thinks that the mastermind recruiter in this case was Amir Mishal, which is kind of a shocking allegation to make. But Mishal's name came up under testimony when one of the government's cooperating witnesses, Abdullahi Yusuf, said on the stand that he thought, so Amir Mishal was affiliated with these kids, and Yusuf said on the stand that I thought Mishal was so extreme that he might be a government informant trying to entrap me.
Right.
Now, let me back up a
little
bit.
Which has happened.
Yes, that has happened a lot. And that's really the central question of this. For some, at least in this case, you know, the government won their conviction. And they say, you know, this is no entrapment.
And the conviction resulted in 6 convictions of Somali Americans, right?
9 total. 6 9 total. Pled guilty before 3 went to trial.
Okay. And those trials are ongoing?
It just wrapped up. So, like,
okay,
we had about a year of, like, pretrial motions, which resulted in 6 folding. And then 3 said they wanted to go to trial, and they were just convicted. Okay.
How far had they gotten in, like, the recruiting process?
Well, that's really, you know, like the big question. You know, might depend on who you ask, how you look at it. I mean, basically, these kids were recorded by also one of their friends, Abdurrahman Bashir, who flipped and became an informant. That's what the government's case rested on, and he recorded them talking about their desire to go to Syria, and so the government had been spying on them, making prior attempts to leave the country. And then they used evidence of their political statements, videos they watched, to sort of tie their thoughts to this conspiracy and say that any action, in furtherance is of it, yeah. evidence of the conspiracy. So, but I don't want to get too far into that because my story here is about Tony Osmond and sure. Michal. So basically what you need to know about Michal is that he was arrested in a joint operation fleeing Somalia over the Kenyan border back in 2007. His fellow traveler, Daniel Maldonado, was convicted of material support for terrorism.
Was it with Al-Shabaab, or who were they with?
Al-Shabaab and okay. Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
Michal, however, denied that. He asked for his lawyer every day. They didn't give him a lawyer. FBI was interrogating him. And then he's back in the United States. And then later he's on the no-fly list. He was never charged. He was asked to become an informant. He says he didn't become an informant. And then Tony Osmond is assigned to spy on him. So Tony Osmond says that Michal brought these kids, brought them to their house, Tony's house, to work out and train. Tony's a personal trainer by trade. And so they were listening to nasheeds or like Islamic songs written by ISIS. I'm not very familiar with that.
ISIS has some just really awful, awful music.
Yeah, ISIS is...
Sorry, go on.
I'm not very familiar with their music, but...
it sucks.
But so Tony says that Amir was recruiting these kids. And so the interesting thing about Amir is that he's in Somalia at a time when any Somali American from Minnesota or elsewhere who was caught and accused of being... providing material support was convicted just because their body was in Somalia. That's personnel, material support in the form of personnel. And so we have Yusuf on the stand saying he thought Michal was trying to entrap him. You have Tony Osmond saying Michal was recruiting them. And then you have when the government put their own informant, Bashir, on the stand, Bashir said under oath that he asked the FBI, hey, is this guy working for you about Michal? And right. he said under oath that the FBI told him, no, he's a bad guy and we want him, quote, behind bars. You know, that's interesting. You had Michal behind bars back in 2007 and you didn't charge him with the crime. So, I'm still digging on this. I haven't drawn an official
conclusion. Right, and in your article, you don't draw any conclusion about...
No, I just try to present what's in the public record and what's in my sources about Amir Michal and what was... said under oath in this trial. So
there have been a couple cases like this. There's been the Newberg Sting was one that I saw a documentary about recently. And how does this to you? How does this relate to like other trials? Like have you followed the Holy Land Fund trial at all?
You know, I'm actually reading Crimes of Terror right now by Wadi Said, and so he's getting into that. I'm familiar with it. And as I understand it, in that case, the government, was able to introduce like. Secret evidence, secret witnesses.
Yeah, I think it was one of the. It might have been the only time when a foreign intelligence agent was allowed to testify anonymously.
Quote Avi.
Is that the name Avi? Yeah,
that was his pseudonym.
Yeah.
But yeah, so yeah, in the Holy Land trial, we saw a similarity to how Holy Land trial. I think again, I'm not super familiar with it, but as I understand it, I think the prosecution was allowed to introduce what would be probably normally considered under a criminal prosecution as, prejudicial evidence like, oh, they listened to these video, whatever, or they read this and this is controversial, this is politically unpopular.
Right.
We're going to use your thoughts to tie you to material support because this law allows us to. And now under Holder versus Humanitarian Law Project, giving legal advice to a terrorist group when that advice is you probably shouldn't be a terrorist is material support. So that this is a weird new world, I guess we're in where this law seems to have been designed to get around the First Amendment. I mean, in this case in Minnesota, these kids clearly made some attempts to leave the country. They clearly had an affinity for ISIS at certain times, but we also saw, basically after a couple attempts to leave the country were made, that's when the government turned an informant inside the group. And it seemed like at this point, I don't remember if all, but I definitely know that Gulad Omar, one of the defendants, was having serious doubts about leaving. And he was saying things like, I don't want to become another statistic. And he was actually saying like, this isn't God's will. And Bashir, his so-called friend, is pushing him, calling him some not so nice names. But specifically, Guled was in a paranoid state. You know, he had been allegedly harassed by the Fed since he was 14 because he had an older brother who went to join al-Shabaab. So Guled is being told by this informant, you have to leave the country because they're closing in on you and it's your only chance to escape arrest. And I've got the fake passport scheme for you. And so it's really controversial for the local Somali American population, right, in Minnesota.
And we were talking earlier about this, and you were saying that it's, well, tell us a little bit also about the childhood of Tony Osman.
Okay, yes. Yeah,
so because as you're saying, is that we want to specifically point out that these are very much outliers within like the refugee community or like the immigrant community in the United States.
Right.
Is that
right?
So this is something that's so rare that it sticks out like a sore thumb, which is why you have a story here. So, anyways, continue.
Yeah, it's not every day you meet someone who whose stepfather was the Khalid Ibrahim, who's an unindicted co-conspirator in the 93 World Trade Center bombing. So that's Tony's background as an Egyptian American immigrant. He's got these family connections. So after his father, Gamal Osman, died, Khalid Ibrahim took him to Afghanistan. And Tony provided me with a photo I've got in front of me here. Mm. And it's on my story. You can see it. And Khalid is hoisting an RPG over his 9 or 10 year old shoulder. And so I think that's why the FBI, this, at least what Tony said, and what Fox said, because I have to give some credit here. Tony first came forward to a local Fox affiliate, and he was upset, because, you know, he seems to have joined the FBI, with some good intentions. And I know that might, you know, sound a little odd to maybe some of your listeners, because generally, sure, informants have,
well, we're actually not sure if we have listeners yet, to be honest. Yeah. Well, but
we're listening.
But we assume that we do. And
So anyways, Tony seems to have gone in with good intentions, and like, so he approached the feds with a conspiracy theory about the death of his father. Like, he thinks some of his relatives killed his dad, and maybe it's not impossible. But I didn't, that's not really where I wanted to go with
sure,
my
no,
story.
Sorry. Continue.
But anyways, what I'm getting to, though, is what you see in this story is you see a change in Tony. He approaches the feds twice. They check out his family tree. They come back to him. They realize he's not just your average immigrant. He's got these connections. And then so he agrees to spy. And then he makes some serious allegations about Mishal. He says that Mishal wanted to, like, was telling him he wanted to build a bomb. And Tony's going, you know, what the hell? Like, I'm sure they're going to arrest him now. They never did. And we know that the FBI usually is, like, pretty eager to arrest people talking about bombs, especially when the people talking are their informants egging things on. And so,
right,
Tony got disillusioned, and then that's why he finally went – he quit the FBI, and he went to the press. So
well, it's definitely a very interesting story that's developing.
And, yes.
Thank you so much for, you know, being attentive to these things, and we're going to have you back on very soon.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I'm still working on these leads, so –
Yeah, thank you so much. You can check out the name of the article is
Man Whose Name Surfaced in Minnesota Terror Trial Was Real Recruiter Says FBI Informant.
And it's on Medium.
It's on Medium. You can follow. You can find it on Twitter at Joe Sabro, JoeSabro. You'll find it there. You can also look me up. Maybe we can tweet out a link or something to my website.
Yeah, definitely. And you can. We'll give you the link for this when it goes up on Audio Boom. So it'll be good.
Yeah.
Cool. Anyways, cool. Thanks for being with us, and we'll talk soon. Cheers.
Thanks. Cheers.
All right, guys, we are back with Night Doll, a.k.a. Dom, hey, a.k.a. our third co-host tonight. So we have a little story to recount.
As Dom has a little public service announcement for us now to follow up that very serious topic with a little information about harm reduction and the importance of dose when it comes to drug use.
Dosage, children. I need you to listen to Aunt Night Doll right now, all right? I'm going to tell you a little story about dosage, all right? So this story is about ketamine, the most terrifying drug I've ever taken.
Dun, 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 dun.
And I've done salvia. And I'll do salvia again. Actually, no.
Delirium.
We'll get to it. So let's start this. So a long, long time ago, as in a year, I got really wasted with all my girls. This was in Philly, so actually 2 years ago. Really wasted. But not so wasted that I was, like, incoherent. Just, like, drunk enough that I was having, like, a really good time. And I became, like, a real, like, a yes girl, a party girl, you know. Just, like, up for anything.
You know, as a DJ, the fact that you're a DJ, I can't see you as a party girl.
Yeah?
No, a DJ is different. But, sorry, anyways, continue. So that seems, like, out of character.
Get you a girl that can do both. Okay. So I was out with my girls all night. Then we go to this after-hour spot, which is just someone's, like, loft. It was actually really amazing. There were CDJs, like, DJ equipment. There were, like, visuals on the wall. We're all talking. I was, like, talking to this kid that looked completely out of it, but I was having the best time talking to him because he looked so attentive and just was listening so well. And I'm like, I really like you. You are just such a great listener. Turns out he was on K because they asked me, hey, Dom, you want to do some weird drugs? And my drunk ass was like, hell yeah. Didn't even ask what it was. They just poured a white line out on the table, snort that shit up. And I was like, whoa, okay, so what is this? And they're like, it's ketamine. I'm like, all right, never done this before. Felt fine. But within 10 minutes, they asked me if I wanted to do another line. They pour out this nice fat line for me. I had to snort that shit up again, and then I was like, hold up. Everything suddenly changed. I thought that if I stopped thinking, I would cease to exist. I forgot how to walk. I forgot.
Oh, yes, the old puppeteer.
Yeah, I forgot pretty much every concept of anything. There was nothing in my brain that could connect to anything else in my brain. And the worst part about all of this was I was really, really drunk, so I got sick. So the concept of finding a bathroom, walking to the bathroom, how do I get there, that, like, almost, like, made my brain explode. So in my mind, I'm like, left foot, right foot, left foot, right foot, all the way down the long hall to, like, the bathroom to puke, mm-hmm. Puking in the bathroom, in the kid's sink, because I couldn't understand the concept of you puke in the toilet, you dumb bitch. Puked in the kid's sink, had to, like, wait in there for, like, 20 minutes and fix it all. I had to walk back out to my friends with the whole left foot, right foot, thinking that if I stop thinking, the whole world will collapse in on itself like a black hole and everyone would be fucked. So finally I make it out there in my
mind.
That's
going to happen anyways.
Yeah, pretty much. We're all fucked, you
Sorry,
guys.
Continue.
So in my mind, I thought that I went up to my girlfriend, like, we got to get out of here. Let's go. And we immediately, like, left or something. But she told me later that I just went up to her and I was like, we got to go. We got to go. We got to go for, like, 10 minutes. We got to go. We got to go. We got to go. And, like, every way that you can say, I probably said in, like, 10 different languages, like, we got to go. We got to go. We got to go. So finally we leave. I'm in the back seat of this car. We're driving to her house. I'm dying, like, because I'm so drunk and I have no concept of what anything is or what my body is. So imagine, like, having to puke and not understanding why you have to puke and what your body's doing.
What
and
is
where
puke?
You do puke. Exactly.
Like, who are we?
Exactly. All trying to keep on concentrating on something and focus on something so that you don't, like, ruin the world and kill everybody, you know? So we get to my girlfriend's house.
I do. Exactly. I do know.
We get to my girlfriend's house, and I get sick again, but I have no concept of a bathroom. So I run out into the middle of the street, and I just, like, puke in the street. And my girls are like, what are you doing? You're so silly. I had, like, three of my girlfriends.
It is a little silly.
Three of my girlfriends had to tuck me literally into bed like a burrito that night. And they were like, never again. I'm like, never again. They're like,
like a burrito all fucked up on cat tranquilizers.
Exactly. Literally a fucked up burrito. It took me, I had to, like, just, my girlfriend had to talk
that's
me into.
That's your new DJ name.
Fucked up burrito.
Yeah.
Seriously, my girlfriend had to talk me down, basically, back into, like, the universe, because I
out of the K hole.
Exactly.
To lift you out of the K hole back into a world where you had object permanence.
Exactly.
And what is that? What is object permanence? That sounds very technical.
It's just like when you're a child, it's like understanding kind of, like, the world and what things are. Like, that's what you lose when you're on a delirium. Like,
yeah.
Sam was saying, like, she couldn't understand who she was or what she was or what things are.
The worst part about it the next day was reading about it, because I had never really read about ketamine in depth. So the next day I was reading an article about it, and it was like, you may forget that you're a human being or what being a human being is. And I was like, hold the fuck up. That is literally the worst sentence I could ever hear about a drug that I just took literally the day before.
I feel like that often.
what is being human?
Yeah, like, who are we?
Why are we here?
Why are we here?
You know what's a really funny thing about that, too? I was talking about this story with Kristen the other, like, a week ago or 2 weeks ago, like, in the middle of the night, high as shit, 4 a.m. And I was like, we need an article, like, that says it, how terrifying it is. And I just find a Vice article. And I'm like, oh, my God, like, oh, was that about ketamine or salvia?
Salvia.
It was, oh, my God. Okay, yeah, this was about salvia. But still, it was funny because she didn't know that she wrote the article. And I scrolled up and I was like, this looks like some shit you would write. And then it's just like her like little Vice picture. Kristen Quinn. I was like, bitch, you wrote this article.
Why is salvia picture
so uniquely terrifying?
It's terrifying.
And it was, the answer was that it's the class of drug it is, like ketamine. And
it's dissociative or delirium?
Yeah, it's dissociative. Yeah, dissociative. That's the word. And I think a delirium as well, but yeah, so you're disassociated from reality and your body. And I think that the experts that I quote, like, says something like, you not only will you, like, not know where your feet are, you won't know if you have feet.
Yeah, exactly. It's just too much.
But then you had another...
Yeah, so I've been talking about this story for a long time because I've done many drugs, and I believe in just... Like, you only live once, and it's all about dosage. So if you want to try something, then I've just been trying things. That's, like, a little bit, you know? So...
There's some limits.
There's limits.
There's some limits. Listeners should not smoke crack.
Okay, so I'm talking mainly about party drugs here. Let me just, like, clarify that, because I'm a DJ. I'm talking about, like, party drugs, like, shit you get offered. I mean, if you get offered crack on the dance floor, I implore you to run. Run out of the club, right? You don't want to be there. I swore never to talk about or never to, like, take ketamine again, but... I was talking to a friend one night at Bossa Nova Civic Club, the perfect place for this type of shit to go down.
Oh, yeah.
just debauchery every day. He was like, oh, well, I have some, like, some ketamine. And I was like, oh. So he was like, just take a little bump, just a little bump. And I was like, this is your moment, Dom. This is the fork in the road, you know? So, of course, I took the bump, and I felt fantastic. It was actually, like... It made me, like, more awake. It was kind of like I understood why that kid was so attentive and why I liked that kid at the party because...
So empathetic.
Yeah, exactly. It made me so, like, I was ready to listen. I wanted to talk about, like, the person I was talking to. It made me, like, happy. And I was like, oh, my God.
So you went from being, like, what is life and the world even to feeling, like, a part of it and connected.
Yeah, a little too connected.
Yeah, from totally disconnected to really
interconnected. Really connected, exactly.
Yeah, speaking of bosses, total non sequitur, I bumped into someone the other night at bosses.
Just as she was getting to the good part.
I know. It's okay.
Anyway, stop. No, I was saying, I bumped into someone at bosses that said, I remember you. We hung out for 2 hours in 2003. Is this guy who's an artist. Anyway, sorry. Go on.
Continue. Right. So back right. to the deep
exactly.
Thought.
Guess he had to be there. So. No, okay. So during the course of this night, I took like 3 bumps. It was like over the course of like.
Compared to two big fat
lines. Two fat lines in 10 minutes to 3 bumps in maybe like 3 hours, you know? And I felt great. And I did it again. Shh. But I've only done it twice since then. But seriously. It was completely different high, a completely different vibe. It was so weird to go from a drug that I swore off to something that I was like, this is a little bit lit.
It's amazing how big a difference dose, scene, and setting can have in your drug experience.
Exactly.
And, I mean, that's why, you know, you have drugs that are prescriptions and then also... You know, considered really dangerous and abusive. Like, you have prescription opiates, amphetamines, you know, meth and Adderall, heroin and oxys. But a lot of it has to do with dose, and that's what...
Well, I mean, that's the real trick. That's how it became evil, isn't it?
What?
Like, because of the dose stuff. Like, with OxyContin, they promised that it would last, like, a certain amount of time. And they lied about that. So they kept asking doctors to prescribe it more and more, and people got hooked. I mean, it's not that simple. It's not like, yeah, that's all there was to it. But Yeah.
But yes, yeah, so the important thing is that with drugs, you need to know the dose, and anytime you do them for the first time, start below
exactly.
It.
Exactly.
Definitely. And also, one last public service announcement, because we have 1 minute left, is that whatever you do, never, ever, 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 ever open a hell mouth. Just don't do it.
You might end up in a K-hole.
Yeah, you might end up in a K-hole.
Don't do it.
30 seconds, guys. Tell me something interesting.
Well, I had a lot more things to say about dokes and...
Well, I'm sorry that time...
And the importance of a safe partying, like always drink water.
Yeah,
always
stay hydrated.
Always,
especially any drug experience. And always stay cool. Don't get dehydrated.
Exactly.
Don't overheat. That's how people get hurt with all kinds of stimulants. So party safely.
Yes. And
party
on. We will leave you. Yeah, party on, Dom. Party on, Kristen. We will leave you with those words of wisdom. Yeah.